the biggest stories from the pages of the London Free Press and lfpress.com. This is the London Free Press Podcast with your host, Rachel Gilbert.
Welcome to the London Free Press Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Gilbert. Ontario has called a group inquest into the deaths of 8 inmates at the Elgin Middlesex Detention Center. The deaths of Raymond Major, Ronald Jenkins, Justin Struthers, James Pigeot, Sean Tyrond Brightman, Chase Blanchard, Malcolm Ripley, and Clayton Bissonnette occurred between 2017 and 2021, and they happened while in custody at or after transfer to hospital from the jail. Since 2009, 24 EMDC inmates have died. So today I'm talking with London Free Press reporter Randy Richmond about the deaths and the details of the inquest that's to come. Hi, Randy. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
Good, good. So inquests are mandatory after a death at the jail, I guess. But some of these deaths occurred back in 2017. So this is, 7 years later. Is it normal that an inquest would happen so much later after the fact?
It hasn't been normal, but it's become the new norm. And it's quite a long wait, especially for families and friends. I mean, there's been some problems because of the pandemic. But even before that, they were 2 to 3 years after. Now they're stretching much, much farther. And, for the families, this is their chance to get some answers. And, when an inmate dies, there's a police investigation, a coroner's investigation, and the families will get a coroner's report, which has some medical information and a few of the details surrounding it. But the inquests themselves delve into a lot more detail about what our inmates were doing, what correctional officers and nurses were doing, what exactly happened and how did this situation lead to this point? And they've revealed some pretty shocking things over the years. So this length of time, unfortunately, has become the normal. But perhaps this is a sign that the province is trying to get through some of them all at once.
Because you did mention in your story that there's a backlog of inquests. Is that's part of the reason? I guess that's why we're waiting so long.
It very well could be why we're waiting so long. I mean, it is difficult to get lawyers together and to get the facts, disclosures together. And, there's lots of material that comes out, and each inquest has lawyers from different parties. For example, the Ministry of the Solicitor General might have a lawyer, and Indigenous associations might have a lawyer if the inmate was Indigenous. Of course, there's lawyers for the inmates themselves. So they have to get all these lawyers together. They have to get the scheduling together. And, the Coroner's Office of Ontario, I'm sure, is very busy. So there's all kinds of reasons why it takes so long. And, some defense lawyers would argue that the province doesn't, or parts of the province, people in the province don't care enough to hurry them up. That's never been proven or disproven, but it does seem to families that it's taking way too long. We're talking 2017 now for one of these.
Yeah.
It's a long time ago.
It does seem like a long time ago. Who's all involved? You mentioned there's lawyers involved, but who's actually doing the inquest? Like, who's in charge of this investigation?
So it's the Office of the Chief Coroner of Ontario, but then there's a Western region. And so they have regional coroners who are in charge of it. And there's a Crown Council, so for the province, which has, been led to, allegations or claims. There's a bit of a conflict of interest because you have one provincial employee, the coroner, and another provincial employee, the Crown, working to find out what happens. It depends on the Crown and the coroner. I found lately there's a lot of independence and there's good debate and serious thought going to it at these inquests I've covered. So you've got those two. You usually have a lawyer for the family, which is often in our cases, our London lawyer, Kevin Egan. Again, you can have the Indigenous Association. Sometimes there's representations from hospitals. There's lawyers from the hospitals if they're involved. It can go on and on. Lots of people can get standing because they really are trying to find out what happened as much as they can. So, and unfortunately, though, or fortunately, inquests have also become a sort of proving ground for lawsuits that come later. So lots of lawyers want to get involved because they know in the future they might be defending their clients, the hospital, the jail, the ministry, whoever, against a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. So everybody's trying to get their voice in there. And it can lead to lengthy and convoluted proceedings, but, usually well worth it in the end.
When there is a death immediately after, you mentioned the family does get the coroner's report. So is there a cause of death determined right away? And then what else would the inquest? I mean, you did mention the inquest is trying to find out who did what and what was happening when. So I guess this is a lot. This is a several questions at once. How it seems like 7 years later, are we going to remember who's doing what and who is doing what when? But the families already know the cause of death, or could that change in the inquest when they're doing this investigation?
To go backwards from your questions, it can definitely change during the inquest. There was an inquest, one of the very first ones in 2011 for the 2009 death of Randy Drysdale. He was assaulted. They knew that, but it turned out the official cause or the inquest cause was homicide. So you get the cause of death medically, overdose or suicide or something when it first happens.
Right.
But you don't know at that point, did somebody slip the drugs? How did the drugs get there? Mm. Was it really a suicide? All these questions. So it can change. And the medical cause of death at the beginning is not the official provincial cause of death. And that's what the coroner makes sure to tell the coroner's jury, is that, there's medical causes, but you have to look at all the factors. And you can call it a homicide, or you can call it some other reason, homicide or natural causes, or accidental, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as far as going back, you do learn a lot more, because you learn, for example, say there's a drug overdose and your loved ones die of a drug overdose. There have been inquests that have found out exactly how those drugs are getting around the cells, with shocking, reasons that, correctional officers are just ignoring inmates fishing. That means sending drugs by on the floor through lines, little packages around the cells when they're closed at night. It can show that correctional officers were not doing a good job checking. It can show whether or not nursing staff was doing a good job. It can show whether the hospital rushed, whether they were rushed to the hospital at the right time, or if their conditions were ignored, if the hospital did a good job in sending them back. All kinds of things can come up at the inquest that you don't get in that initial report. Really important things that speak to what's going on at the jail.
Does every death get an inquest?
Yeah, every death at a jail now gets an inquest. So, we're still at what, going to be halfway there, roughly about the 24, I think, by the time these are done. So there's still a long ways to go.
And I mean, some of these are, as we said, 7 years later, but even a couple years later, I mean, people are going to forget details. Are these things written down? Like how credible and reliable can we assume people's memories are of what happened?
That's a really good point. And that is a problem at these inquests. It's a problem because sometimes, the lawyers for the family will question correctional officers about their notes. And sometimes the notes aren't there. The logs aren't there anymore. There is video evidence now, but I'm not so sure from 7 years ago how much we're going to have left. I'm not even sure when the cameras came in. They might be there, but who knows what happened to it. And right. I know that the lawyers always have to be very quick on their feet and demand the video be saved. And I believe the coroner's office does that as well. So, but right, memories, if you're an inmate or correctional officer and someone died 7 years ago, it's going to be traumatic and you're going to remember certain things, but there's lots you're not going to remember.
Sure.
If you're nursing staff, do you remember what you did that day? That's a long time away, and that's a problem for sure.
Can any of these deaths be prevented? I mean, it seems like we're hearing of deaths at the jail often enough. I mean, we don't want to hear of any deaths at the jail, certainly. Can they be prevented? Do the inquests find that they should have been prevented ever?
These inquests, these juries do excellent jobs of finding lots of factors that could have prevented these deaths. Anything from better communication between healthcare staff and correctional staff, better healthcare, better supervision by correctional staff, better management of the institutions, better resources given by the province, better training for everybody. There's lots of, not lots, but there's several cases where people have been sick and dying, and the correctional officers and healthcare staff assume it's from withdrawal, and it's not. They're dying from something else. That still happens. There's still staffing problems where there's not enough staff to look after people properly. There's a lot of staff in that place that are overworked, right? And there's only so much they can do in a jail for healthcare. Lots of things they could have an infirmary that they don't. They could have all kinds of things done to that jail to prevent more deaths. There, unfortunately, are doesn't seem to be any way to stop drugs from coming into institutions. It just seems to be what happens. But there may be ways to make reaction time quicker when someone overdoses. There may be better ways to check on mental health of people. All these things have come up in inquests, and only a certain percentage of them have been implemented. And that's why I think we're still having deaths.
We know that our jails are full, over full. I mean, we have way too many inmates in there for what they're built for. And staffing levels and staffing generally has been an issue over the years at Elgin Middlesex Detention Center. You did mention that's going to be one of the things this inquest will look at. What are the issues of staffing? Why don't we have enough staff in there? Can we not hire them? Do people not want the jobs? What's going on?
That's a good question. I mean, and the staffing problems come and go depending sometimes on the relationships between the union there that represents the correctional officers and the management of the province. So it has calmed down in the past and then got bad again, depending on what's happening. But I think it's just difficult to have proper staffing because when you move inmates around the institution, you need to have correctional officers there with them. And that leads to shortages in the units because you're drawing correctional officers on. Mm-hmm. There may simply be a fact that, you know, there's simply not enough people for the amount of inmates there. And maybe there can't be enough staffing there. That place was built for about 150 inmates, one per cell, way back in the 70s. And now it's over 400. Wow. You're getting two in a cell. That's normal. You're getting three in a cell sometimes. And so they're just cramming people in there. And I'm not sure any number of extra staff will help when you've got that many people. And then, of course, when there are staff calling in sick because it's a high stress job or, you know, on PTSD leave, then lockdowns happen. And when lockdowns happen, that's when trouble starts because inmates are stuck inside their cells for 23 hours of the day. They get out for a shower and a phone call. If you're in your cell for 23 hours a day and, you know, what else is there to do but maybe make some alcohol or take some dangerous drugs because you're bored or stressed or whatever, right? And so mm-hmm. it just feeds on itself. So every time there's a staffing problem or shortages and lockdowns happen, that's when the violence and the drug use exacerbates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You also mentioned there are issues with access to programming, which could contribute to some of these deaths. What do you mean by that?
Well, when the province renovated the jail, retrofitted it to add more inmates, they took out a lot of these rooms that were used for programming. And so that programming space was lost and they were turned into jail cells for three people. They're called the welfare cells. And now sometimes in a bad time, sometimes five people are in those cells. And which, by the way, when people are crowded into cells, that means the third person or the fourth and fifth person in the larger cells, they're sleeping on their floor with their head near the toilet. So again, lockdown like that for 23 hours, you can imagine the tensions and the stress.
Yeah.
So the lack of programming has been a problem because of the physical nature of the jail. And also because a lot of it's difficult sometimes to get people in there, volunteers to help out. It's not a great place to come. And I know that sometimes there's been bad relations between jail administration and some people who want to volunteer. I've heard of some who are no longer there, no longer welcome there. Hmm. So it seems to be hit and miss the programming over the years. And the programming is supposed to be helping you rehabilitate. Because some of the people, actually most people in there are just awaiting trial, I'm not sure if there's the same inclination for rehabilitation from the province if someone's just awaiting trial. But of course, people are waiting trial in there for years and years. So it's quite a different system than the federal system where there are programs where people can go to school. People do that at EMDC now and then, but overall you hear that there's not much to do out there and there's not much rehabilitation at all.
Yeah. So 24 deaths at the hospital, 24 inmate, or not at the hospital, 24 inmates have died from EMDC since 2009. How does that compare to other jails in the province? Are we seeing more deaths than other jails or are we kind of on par? I mean, obviously, we don't want to see any, but how do we compare to others?
It's difficult to tell because the deaths aren't necessarily reported. We find out about deaths at EMDC if we hear a call on the scanner or if someone tips us off. I suspect sometimes we don't hear about deaths. So we don't hear from deaths from other institutions as well. London does seem high. You'd have to look at like kind of per capita. I know mm-hmm. Hamilton has a problem. Ottawa has a problem. Toronto has had problems. There seems to be deaths all over the province. And, you know, part of that is recently is because of the onslaught of the opioid epidemic, the onslaught of fentanyl, such a deadly drug. It does seem high. What's that, 24? And my math is terrible. 14, 15 years, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we're averaging more than 1 year, almost. At one point, it was almost 2 a year.
Right.
It does seem high. And, you know, EMDC has special circumstances that other ones, jails do not have. They don't have the kind of supervision where you can actually see into the cells when you're at your correctional officer station. It's down the hallway, and that's been a problem. There are closed circuit cameras, but people aren't required to watch them. There's none in the showers where a lot of beatings and assaults take place. You know, there's all kinds of problems that are particular to that place, and that may be why we seem to be seeing higher than other places.
Yeah. We talked about London lawyer Kevin Egan, who has been following EMDC deaths for years. We've heard about him in the news, of course, and he's been advocating for a safer jail. He represents a lot of these families of the victims of in this inquest. Can you give us a general idea of what he's been fighting for? What would he like to see happen at the jails to improve?
Well, he's been fighting for a lot of different issues over the years: improved healthcare, better supervision. He fought for closed circuit cameras at an inquest, which finally was implemented. He's fought for, you know, better healthcare there, better like an infirmary, which he's lost that battle. He's been fighting these issues one by one as they come. Lately, though, he's also been fighting for counseling for inmates and for correctional officers and staff who witness a death. But lately, he's been calling for, he wants the jail to be shut down and rebuilt. He said, enough is enough. It's kind of like all these years of him fighting all these different issues. He just has come to the conclusion that that place is physically a disaster. You can't see the inmates if you're a correctional officer at your station. It's moldy, it's dirty, it's ancient, it's crowded. You would like to see, he's fought for recommendations at inquests. He's won a couple times, the jury recommending shut it down and rebuild it.
Mm-hmm. And it hasn't happened. How easy would it be to convince the province to pay for something that houses people that a lot of us just want to throw away and ignore? You know, how easy is it to convince someone to spend money on that?
It's almost impossible. I mean, we generally in the public simply don't care. There's no votes for helping inmates.
Right.
And, you know, honestly, a lot of those people out there are not people that you want to have beside you in your neighborhood, especially if they're not rehabilitated there. So, you know, there's lots of people there who are in trouble. There's lots of people there who are, you know, struggling with mental health and addiction who don't belong there, lots. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Egan has also fought that we have more ankle bracelets, more house arrest than jail. But the province, you know, the individuals I talked to in the province, they do care. Nobody wants to see anybody die. But ultimately, the province doesn't care. And, you know, look at what happens in London. I've written about the jail constantly since 2011. Mm-hmm. And I never see a city councillor or a local politician, MP or MPP, respond to my stories. Occasionally the MPPs, the New Democrats have, never respond to my stories saying, this is terrible, things should change, what can we do? I know it's a provincial institution, but it's right in our city borders. And the lack of reaction from politicians is alarming and astounding to me. And so, yes, it's very, very difficult to convince the province to spend a lot of money there. They have hired more correctional officers across the province. They do recognize at the provincial level that there's a problem. But, you know, if it comes down to votes, what's going to matter? Highways, buildings, houses, or jails?
Put more money into healthcare, put more, you know, build a new jail, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So inquests, of course, have happened before into jail deaths, and juries have made recommendations. You did mention some of them. Are these recommendations even implemented? Like what happens after the inquest? Does it make any difference?
That's a great question. And Kevin Egan would argue no. My view, there's been, boy, I didn't know the percentages. I did an analysis many years ago and it wasn't high. Generally, they're ignored. Largely, they're ignored. There are some that are implemented. 24/7 nursing at EMDC. That was a recommendation many years ago, and they have that now. An
Okay.
excellent recommendation, and excellent that the province followed it, but most are not. When you get the province has a certain amount of time to respond to recommendations, and often the responses are, we're already doing that, or that's not feasible, or this is not financially worthwhile, things like that. So it's not a great system because they're not binding.
Right.
But it does jog, and if you get enough inquests saying the same thing, sometimes things will change. But
Right.
from one inquest, not very likely.
Okay. So when does this inquest begin?
This inquest is supposed to start late fall, maybe November, December.
Okay.
And I think one of the reasons why it's a group one all of a sudden is that perhaps the Crown and the Coroner's Office are trying to group together these for like common issues. So perhaps if you have four inquests over 4 years that say the same thing, it's not as much impact as one big inquest with eight deaths saying the same thing.
Okay.
That might have more impact. I'm just guessing there, but it seems to me that that's a could be a strategy that, you not only are clearing up a backlog, but you're also identifying common issues, and maybe that has more of an
Right.
impact as well. So we're
Yeah, I was
looking
going to
at
ask about the pros and cons of grouping them together that way. So that
Right.
makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. It's it, yeah, it does make sense in a certain way to do that. The cons are, of course, it's very difficult for individual inmate stories to get the exposure that they deserve. And I have found these inquests, even when I've missed a few days, because it's difficult to go to all, you miss a lot about what happened to the person, what happened with the staffing, mistakes that were made or attempts to help, both the good and the bad. You miss that. So when you have eight inmates at once, their personal stories and what happened to them may get lost a bit.
Yeah.
And for the families, that's going to be hard because this is their chance for their loved one's story to be told, the good and the bad. And that could be a disadvantage to many at once. And media doesn't cover them as well as we'd like to. It's a staffing issue for us as well.
Yeah.
Hours a day, right? And this one's going to go on for weeks and weeks.
Yeah.
So something will get lost, but maybe it will have a greater impact having all these together.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're going to watch your reporting on this. I know I'm assuming you'll be on this story when the inquest begins. So we'll keep an eye on that and follow that at lfpress.com. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you.